The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
This episode of La Verdad Podcast is brought to you by our friend Sonia Figueroa of CSonia.com.
Hey, B-Fig.
What's up?
What's my favorite thing to do in the summer?
Watch baseball.
No. You know, my favorite thing to do is barbecue and family get-togethers, but it's hard to do when I don't have a nice big backyard.
True, which is why we should be reaching out to our chica Sonia if you want to buy a house.
Yeah, actually, Sonia has a ton of experience in helping people find the right home, especially first-time buyers, over 12 years to be exact. So, if you're listening right now and you have the itch on buying or selling, you need to contact Sonia Figueroa. V-Fig, how can you do that?
Easy. Just visit www.csonia.com. That is www.seesonia.com. Or just search for her online. She also speaks Spanish.
Habla español, mi gente, and back to the show.
This is La Verdad Podcast.
Mi gente, we're back at it again with another episode of La Verdad Podcast, and this is your host Christian. And it's a little empty today, man, because I'm usually surrounded by a big team. Yeah. I have our intern out there and kind of working things out, but today's more intimate, and it's a cool and awesome conversation that we're gonna be having with our guest today, who you know, was able to come by in such short notice. I really appreciate it. But with appreciate us today. You, before we go into that, you know, before we go into the discussion, I do want to bring up that if you like our show, if you want somebody else to hear it, please subscribe to the podcast. We're going to be available on iTunes. I mean, we are available on iTunes or on your podcast platform. So in your phone, when you pull up your iPhone, if you have an iPhone, go to the podcast app. You know, go ahead and subscribe to it. Also, we're going to be releasing this one on YouTube. So those that are listening to the podcast on audio format, go to YouTube so you can actually put a the sound of my voice to my face and kind of figure out who there the hell go. Is talking, right? So do us a favor. We're available on all the social media platforms that you might be using, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, as at La Verdad LTD. So, you know, share it, subscribe, and show us some love. So also, if you go to our website, www.laveldadltd.com, you might find some blogs. And I just wrote my first blog a couple weeks ago. So to me, it was like a big deal because I hate writing, man. And everybody was kind of telling me, like, yo, you should get into this, write a blog. So I ended up writing a blog. It's about my grandmother, who I bring up a lot on this podcast, who's most likely, you know, pretty much the inspiration for what I do on a daily basis. So check it out. But today, you know, today is Sunday, August, what is it, 19th? Let me double check here. August 20th. And there's a Pilsen Fest going on right now, right?
It's so a big fest, bro.
It's a big ass fest. I saw, like, a lot of different performers. They brought
Nina Sky came out yesterday.
Nina Sky. I think Ile is today, I think. Ile is, I follow her because she's Calle 13's, Residente Calle 13's sister.
Oh, word.
So, yeah, so she's the one that used to be known as PG 13.
Oh, okay.
So people,
keeping the family.
Yeah, so Puerto Rican, they're bringing a Puerto Rican over to the Pilsen Festival. A lot of great community-based restaurants or community things from the actual community. I saw yesterday people on Snapchat were kind of highlighting it. So it's awesome that we're doing this podcast on that day, on this day, because we're going to talk a little bit about what's happening in Pilsen. And with us today, we have Hilario Dominguez, who is actually the housing organizer for the Resurrection Project.
How you doing?
I appreciate you coming by. How you been,
man? I appreciate you having me, bro. I've been great, man. I've been great. Just, you know, in the work, in the struggle. But we're here, man. I know. I'm sure we're going to talk about all that.
Yeah, definitely. So we brought him on. if you haven't seen the news, maybe, you know, perhaps we have a lot of listeners who are not necessarily in Chicago.
Yeah,
they might be interested a little bit more what's happening, but we have a lot of listeners over in the East Coast, New York, who's actually going through gentrification as well. So if you are not from the area, Pilsen is a neighborhood that's over, I want to say, a little bit closer to the south side. It passes downtown.
Yeah.
You know, downtown, a lot of people, you know, is basically the middle of Chicago. You kind of want to, you know, if you look at Chicago, downtown's over at the top, and then you have, it separates the north side versus the south side, right?
Definitely.
Our show is recorded in the north side to give you a geographical region of Chicago. Our show is recorded in the north side. You have to pass downtown to get to Pilsen, right?
Exactly.
Kind of, you know, and somehow. So the Pilsen neighborhood has been going through a lot of gentrification, and we'll talk a little bit more about the history of the Pilsen neighborhood. But for those who don't know, it's majorly Latino, right?
Yes.
A Latino-based neighborhood.
Right now it is. So Pilsen, back in the 50s and 60s, was majority Western European.
Interesting.
Actually, specifically Czech.
Okay.
So what happened was, at the influx of Mexican migrants, with all the programs that were going on at the time in the country that were sort of incentivizing an influx of Latino, mm-hmm. of Latino migration, Pilsen became a port of entry for Mexican immigrants.
Interesting.
So when that started happening, it was a really interesting aspect of community that started to unfold. You started seeing the Western Europeans sort of start fleeing away from the community, mm-hmm. saying like, oh, well, here come the brown people.
Yeah.
There goes the neighborhood, you know.
Yeah.
So they were sort of leaving. But at the same time, our people, they needed a place to feel sanctuary, right?
Yeah.
To feel at home. So they started organizing, and they started fighting for better quality resources in the neighborhood, like housing, exactly. education, peace, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
So now you see Pilsen, what it's come to today, which is this beautiful, bright, vibrant neighborhood, mm-hmm. right? With Mexican culture literally painted all over the community.
And it's one of those things that if you ever have a chance to stop by the Chicago area, go to those neighborhoods, especially Pilsen, because Pilsen kind of gives you an idea of the culture that was there. It was a very working class culture, or people, I mean, the community. So you go in there and you see, you know, you see paintings or you know, quote unquote graffiti that shows, you know, a priest and then a working class person working together to bring the community back up. It's very interesting too, and I wanted to bring this up. I talk a lot to family members. I'm Puerto Rican, so one of the things that I talked to my grandfather and my father about was, you know, where did they grow up, right, in Chicago?
Yeah.
Just so I could have an idea of, you know, because where you grow up, it kind of makes, you know, the way that you act is kind of from where you grow up, right?
It's definitely part of your identity, right?
So a lot of Puerto Ricans were living around the 18th Street, which is Pilsen, because mm-hmm. Pilsen starts where?
Pilsen, so Pilsen goes, if I have to give you the box that it is,
uh-huh.
it would be... some would argue a little more, but Halsted to Western.
Okay.
And from 16th to, what's that like? That'd be Cermak.
Okay.
And so that would be the box. Some say it expands a little bit more too. But that's to the general area.
So the funny part is that a lot of the Puerto Ricans that were around that same time that the majority Latino or Mexican community was going into Pilsen, Puerto Ricans were actually in there as well,
mm-hmm.
Because they were working in either in the same factories or the same kind of jobs.
Absolutely.
So 18th Street, right where Providencia de Dios, Providence of God Church is, right there, it's 18th, I don't know what the cross streets, right by the 1994,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Puerto Ricans in that whole area, and those Puerto Ricans that came from there eventually moved into the Humboldt Park area, or Wicker Park or Logan Square. They were very tight with the Mexican community. So you will hear, for example, family members in parties put some you know, Mexican music on because they identified a lot with the Mexican communities. It came to the point where, you know, ICE will do raids, right, in the area, and the Puerto Ricans were the ones that would be like, hey, yo, hide over here. I got your back. So it created this tight-knit community. And the reason I bring this up is because when you go to Pilsen, just the landscape of the area is very tight, right?
Yep.
So I think it created that sense of we need to take care of each other because people don't like us. People are going to try to get rid of us. And we need to definitely have our backs. Do you feel like that's the same feeling that you've gotten before from the Pilsen neighborhood? Very, very family-oriented?
For sure, definitely. I think you made a great point because, see, back in the day, the center was industrial. So that's where all the jobs were. So the surrounding communities, including Pilsen, since it's about 10-minute drive outside of central downtown, that's where the workers were living. So if you go into a house inside of Pilsen, all the rooms are really small. And they did that purposefully so that multiple people could live in each unit, right? And it also brought that sense of community because you had 10, 12 mugs living in the same building. You know what I'm saying? Like, they were all in there. And they had to. And sort of by nature, they grew a communal aspect. Mm-hmm. And also with the fact that, like, they were outsiders, man. They were the foreigners. So you had to stick together. And that's still very, very true in Pilsen. There's a huge pride for the community of Pilsen, especially when if you're from there, you are proud to say it, right? Yeah. Like, and that's just like a nature of Chicago. I don't think there's any other city that I've been to that reps the city flag as hard as we do.
As hard as Chicago.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we even tattoo it on ourselves and stuff. And the same with Pilsen. Like, people brand themselves because they feel so close-knit to that community.
You know, and one of the things that I've noticed, too, was that same kind of pride to the community as we share for Humboldt Park, right? Mm-hmm. Or for example, you know, I grew up close to Humboldt Park, Logan Square, and I still kind of used to claim Humboldt Park. I feel like people do the same with Pilsen, you know, because it's that one area that is quote unquote home. Even if you don't live in the Pilsen area, maybe you live a little bit closer to Little Village, which is the next, right?
Yep.
You still used to go to Pilsen to either get, you know, the best tacos that you can or
bro, you had to. Like, so my parents, they divorced and they moved out and they lived in separate communities. So my mom ended up living in McKinley Park and I ended up living with my mom's. But Pilsen was my home. Mm-hmm. So all my coming of age, like, my house was only where I slept, essentially. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So, but I would go home. I would go to my friends' houses and be on 18th and hang out in Biggie Park. So that's where I grew up. So, yeah, when you say, like, even if you have one touch of Pilsen, you claim that for your own, right? And that's how I felt because, like, yeah, my mom's house was a little outside the neighborhood, but I grew up on 20th and May, right? I grew up on 18th Street and Troop. So it's like that's your stomping grounds, 19th, right? Because of Boogie Park.
Yep.
So, yeah, man, you're right. Like, people grow a sense of pride to the community.
Yeah. And I want to kind of paint a picture of what's happening now. You know, we're going to get to it more of what gentrification means, but before I do that, we're looking at history right now, right? You see the Latinos moving into the area. Unfortunately, when Latinos or anybody, a minority, moves into an area that doesn't necessarily are not wealthy, the area starts deteriorating or the area starts getting less resources, right? So eventually, less resources causes, I believe, also the need for a family, quote unquote, or a gang, right? And the reason I'm bringing up the gang life is because I think it goes hand in hand with the people that are pro the gentrification, right? People from the community who might be pro gentrification. So was Pilsen, from when I remember Pilsen being one of those spots that, man, I probably shouldn't be going through it. I probably shouldn't be going through Pilsen and going through Little Village, especially not being Mexican.
Bro, you mom's always said, like, don't be out as soon as the street lights are on.
Yeah.
I mean, growing up, that's where I got checked by gangs, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's where I learned how to survive and sort of adapt when gangs get in your face or when that becomes part of your life, right? Like, I mean, I had a brother who joined a gang. Mm-hmm. One of my older brothers, he joined a gang, and it's there, bro. Like, and I think what makes it so attractive is that they offer a sense of community that oftentimes isn't there from resources.
Exactly.
You know,
and I think you mentioned it. I was Facebook stalking you, man, a couple days ago, bro. And you mentioned, you know, that growing up in that area, you were able to code switch really well, and it's proven to be positive for you later on in life. I feel the same way. You know, I was able to go from, yo, knowing exactly what words to say to a gangbanger that will come up to you and be like, yo, what you is, you know, exactly.
Yeah,
and
bro. That.
And knowing what to say to being in a classroom and giving a, you know, a project
presentation,
or presentation to all these different donors, you know.
Yeah, man, it's huge. As a matter of fact, interestingly, yesterday I was out with some of my friends, and we went to Los Comales on 18th and Ashland. We parked in the lot that they got in the back, and we got out the car, and there was, you know, a group of young men there and women too, and they approached us and checked us. I don't know what gang it was, but they checked us, bro. And in my head, I kind of laughed, and I was like, "Wow, like this is still happening, right?" But I didn't forget how to respond. I didn't, you know, none of that was forgotten about. They asked us like who we are, and I was like, "Man, we're just people from the neighborhood, bro." And he was like, "Oh, you know, we just want to make sure." I was like, "Nah, man, we're just people that love the neighborhood just as much as you. Just trying to figure it out." He's like, "Oh, all right, you know." Yeah. But yeah, bro, you have to learn how to code switch, and I think that's what gives us an advantage. Sometimes, especially we're in that professional setting.
Yeah.
You know, like there's something about living and surviving in the streets and having to do that and having to adapt that and know how to navigate it that makes working in the professional setting a little easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I use a lot of the stuff that I learned from growing up in an urban environment, right? Having to deal with different personalities, having to deal with, drama, and using that and working with it in the actual professional setting. But so I brought up the gangs, the gangs topic because I feel like people use that for the approval of gentrification. Right? Mm. It happens, you know. It happens a lot, especially when you go into new neighborhood and say, hey, we're cleaning up, we're bringing resources into the community. And I feel, and perhaps you feel a little different on it, I feel like at first they start putting these different programs in place, kind of setting it up, kind of cleaning the table a little bit to eventually go in and take it all completely. So before we go into that discussion, I kind of wanted to bring out the definition, the Webster definition of gentrification. And they mention it as the process of renewal and rebuilding accompanying the influx of middle class or affluent people into deteriorating areas that often displaces poorer residents.
Mm-hmm.
That's the definition that you find online. Now, if you go online and you search gentrification, you'll find a lot of negatives, a lot of positives. Sometimes I sit back and I'm like, yo, I need to look at the whole picture of what's really happening. But a common theme on the gentrification and a common theme that I've heard from people of Pilsen is that they hate the big corporations that are coming into the area, taking over, and then everybody else is kind of like, hey, you're SOL, as opposed to the mom and pop shops that are coming in or building up, because they want to build a sense of community with the community.
Yeah.
Do you feel the same way on that, or is it kind of like...
Man, bro. Listen, Pilsen, contrary to popular belief, has not been gentrified. This gentrification didn't start the last 10 years. Gentrification in Pilsen started in the 80s and some would even say 70s, right? And it's just been really slow.
Yeah.
But over the past, since 2010, so past 7 years, there's been crazy sparks and ignitions that have just excelled it. And now you're starting to physically see the changes.
The change.
Yeah, bro, and completely agree. There is, I don't think you will find someone that will say, I do not want development. I do not want improvement for a community. But the tricky part is I want things to get better, but I don't want my tia to leave.
Yeah, exactly.
I want my family to be able to stay here and
bear
the fruits of their labor because they built the community.
Yeah.
So when huge predatory developers come into the community and they're like, oh, we're going to create these huge complexes that will be centers for the community and will improve the community and improve the housing, instantly you're like, improve? You know, who are you with your white savior complex to come into our neighborhood and think that our neighborhood needs improvement or saving?
Yep, exactly.
You know, we've been doing that. We've been working.
We've been doing it ourselves.
Our tías and tíos and pops and moms, they've been working on that when they've come here. Like, that's why they started organizing, right? Like, they're the ones who put as soon as they left work, had to put on their walking shoes and get to work for the community.
Exactly.
Right? So don't come in here and now think you're going to build something and save our community. Not only that, make it easy to kick out our families because now they're being priced out. Yep. Like, evictions are off the charts in Pilsen right now.
And bro, I think one of the common occurrences that happens when gentrification happens in the community is, as you mentioned, you know, they come in and they say, we're going to give you this, we're going to give you that. But then the first thing that happens is either, you know, the landlord starts saying, oh, man, they're going to buy my building for $500,000 or whatnot. And yet I'm charging people rent for $600, $800, two-bedroom, which is, you know, amazing for the city of Chicago. You don't really find that. So what ends up happening is that they might kick the first person out because their lease is done. And in that apartment that was $600, now it's $1,200. And they fix it all up, right?
Easy.
But then you have the other ones that are sticking around. They've been there for 20, 30 years. They know that they don't have the money, right? So they start neglecting that apartment, right? Kind of like the slumlords that we remember from back in the 60s and 70s. They stop taking care of those apartments, and then that person is forced to move. Now, you've been living here for 30 years, 20, 30 years. You know exactly who is, you know, the bodega in the corner.
Right.
You know exactly where to go. You probably don't have a car because, unfortunately, you know, they might be poor. Their money is going somewhere else, right? Their money has to go. There's other priorities as opposed to a car. So everything's walking distance to you. Your neighbor is your best friend.
Yep.
Now you're 60, 70 years old, and you're forced to move the community. It's a trauma, man. It's shocking, dude. It's crazy.
It's a struggle, man. I think it is evident and clear that there are systems and institutions that have made it really hard for our people to progress, right, to get higher. So because of that, they take advantage of those gaps.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to take advantage of those gaps and come in and show and bring in a suitcase of money to my tía's house and be like, I will give you $300,000 cash. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, I've done pretty well for myself where I'm in a position where I can buy a home.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I've been looking to buy a home.
Yeah.
Other day I found a property in Pilsen. And this is rare now. A little less than three. Less than $300,000, right? So I immediately, I was like, okay, I gotta go get pre-qualified and pre-approved and start the process.
Yeah.
That takes a day. So by the end of the day, I was ready to go. It was like, next day, let's start, you know, the actual buying process.
Yeah.
Okay. So I get a call that same day at the end of the day. And it was like, listen, property's gone. And I was like, what?
Get the fuck out of here.
I was like, what do you mean? Yeah. Building sold. $400,000 cash.
Oh.
Now, who can compete with $400,000 cash?
Wow.
Not me, you know? Like, I was a former teacher, not even on a teacher salary.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way I'm competing with $400,000 cash. And also, you get, you know, it's easy for someone to be like, oh, why, how could they sell to someone that's not Latino? I'm from the neighborhood. But It's hard to control that, man. It's hard to tell people don't sell to the family or to the realtor
that's offering
you $400,000 cash.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll probably get rid of that area and build something up on it. And we see that a lot. Like you said, you know, it's like, how do you tell those people to say no to all the money that they see coming in and they've worked so hard for it? Now they can take that money, go somewhere else or whatnot.
Right.
But we see that happening a lot in the area. And like you mentioned earlier, a lot of people might sit there and say, oh, well, this is awesome. You know, it's so beautiful now. Like, you know, now I could walk around. There's trees as opposed to garbage on the ground.
Right.
And this is what really pisses me off, because I feel like it goes hand in hand with the political structure that we have here in Chicago. And I won't get too much into politics. I try to not get too much into it when it comes down to little topics like this, because some people might get turned off automatically and stop listening to the actual full conversation. But you see it happening where it's like all the money that went to, once the gentrification starts happening in one area, they're like, all right, cool, let's give them all this money and let's start building new things.
Yeah.
And the reason I bring that up is I remember there was an video interview that you did.
Yeah.
And the sign in the background said, it was a sign that Chicago puts out every time they're building something new.
Yeah.
And it says, helping build a new Chicago, is it?
Yeah.
And then somebody spray painted gentrified Chicago.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, like that's a bold statement, but it's true, you know, because now you start seeing the roads are cleared, right? Because that belongs to the city. The garbage is getting picked up, you know, as opposed to not just the buildings that are private developers doing it. But now the city somehow is working in there and trying to make it beautiful and all that. Yeah. Have you dealt a lot with? Oh, and then the other thing, too, that I noticed, which is political as well, is maybe they start raising up those property taxes, right? And people start getting kicked out. So have you had to deal with that a lot
within the Pilsen man. Area? So much every single day. And it's so intricate and complex because on various different levels, you have to maneuver and navigate through political institutions and political inequalities that are put in place, but also at the ground level of what I just explained of how do you convince that family to not sell when they're being offered these large sums of money, cash, right? Yeah. And for instance, like you have political institutions inequalities, like what's going on with the tax assessments right now. And that's crazy, bro. Like the fact there's evidence, proof, hard, like in your face that the assessor's office has been taxing communities of color disproportionately to affluent white communities, right? So like, fuck the fact that we can't even afford shit. Now it's just harder for us because they're just taxing us more. They're saying like our properties are worth way more than they should be, which means you can tax the property more, right? And make it all harder. So you have these political barriers and obstacles to sort of maneuver. And then you have the ground level conversations where you got to convince families like, listen, if you were to stay and you were to leave that house as a legacy for your family or for your kids, it's going to be worth way more than $400,000 right now. Right. But with low income families where our families are, it's hard to bet on the future.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a very hard thing to. I've had this conversation with a lot of people that sell life insurance.
Yeah.
Right. Where it's like, man, it's so hard to get Latinos to buy into life insurance.
Yeah.
Like not just Latino, but lower middle class to poor, because it's like I need the money now to survive, to know what I'm going to eat tomorrow.
And can you blame them? Yeah. Right. Like. Yeah. No, right? So when families say, oh, it's an education, our families are just not educated enough. Well, hold on. Be careful there with that narrative, because it makes it sound like our families aren't knowledgeable.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily the case. It could be just the fact that we got to eat.
Yeah.
We got to put food on the table.
Yeah,
so we got to act now. You know, we don't have the luxury oftentimes to think in the future. And so that ground level sort of complexity, it's a challenge all around, man. You're talking about difficulty at the ground level and then at the political structures that you have to balance, right? So that those are questions that I constantly have to think about, is how do we balance development, because it's coming.
It's going to happen.
It's coming. How do we balance the development, but also how do we protect our families from being displaced?
Yeah.
Like, you cannot kick out my tia after she's worked so hard to build this community, you know, and for the mere fact that she can't afford it anymore.
Yeah.
And now you're talking about property values that teachers can't even afford. Aren't teachers the people that you want in your community? Exactly. So like, you know, how do we start balancing that?
And it plays a big role, too. I was reading an article that talked about some of the effects of gentrification. And it starts with, you know, you come in, people that are renting, they can't afford it, you know, because the prices go up in rent. Then it goes into even all the way down to the children, right? It affects the children because the schools now are getting really nice, but the parents can't afford it.
Yep.
So the kids have to now go to another area, and it hits them twice because those kids were used to their friends. Those kids were used to the teachers. The teachers knew how to teach those kids in the area. Now those kids are sent to perhaps a suburb, usually is what I see happening now, that a lot of people are moving into suburbs that are a little bit cheaper. And those teachers don't know how to deal with those kids. So those kids suffer now twice, right? They're suffering because they lost their family, their friends, and now they lost their sense of community, and now they lost the connection they had with the teacher, perhaps not the same type of teacher. Going back towards the tax assessment, what are some of the issues that you've seen on there that like are right there in your face that are showing you that something wrong is happening, something kind of biased is happening?
For sure. Here's a clear one. You see a one flat single family home, and this home, you know, just for sure, you're like, oh well, you know, it needs fixing up. You can see physically it's sometimes even the structure is off, and you can even see the slant in the building. So you think in your head, I wonder how much a building like this is worth. When you just sort of tell, like, oh, well, that house can't be worth so much. It needs a lot of fixing up. But when you see that that property is worth close to $300,000, you ask yourself, like, that's odd. Yeah. Something's interesting happening. And that's what, you know, it's not necessarily that huge disproportion, but those are the disproportions that you see in the tax assessments, right? And that system is so complex for anyone to understand that there's mathematical algorithms that tell you how much your house is worth. But, okay, let's go with that. Let's go with the fact that there's going to be computers that tell us how much your house is worth. Let's make sure we have the best program that is going to get as close as possible to fair, right? Because what most people don't understand is there's this ideal of regression. And regression simply just means that there will be some error. There will always be regression. But how can we make that error, that margin of error, as small as possible so we get as accurate as possible? Especially when you're talking about our families, right? Because if whatever price you put on that property is going to determine those property taxes. And if that is unfair, now you're talking about families that may be priced out because they're paying too many taxes and they shouldn't be in the first place.
And then if you look at it too, it's something that me and my dad talk about all the time, is that the new tax percentage that went into effect, I want to say 2 years ago or something like that, I might be wrong on the date, but was only against buildings or areas that were worth $250,000 or more, right? So the funny part is, like, I think the house that we were in or a friend's house, I think before that tax increase happened, it was only worth like $196, $198. The tax increase happened. They got their house reassessed, right? Oh, it's worth $250,000.
Easy, right?
Come on, man. Bullshit, dude. You just want an extra percentage of tax. And it sucks because I see it happening a lot within the community. And what really sucks is that the actual person that's in charge is a person of color, right?
Yeah, he's your people, bro. He's Puerto Rican, bro.
Yo, that's the crazy part. I met the guy before. I talked to the guy, and it's just kind of like there's been a lot of issues behind it, you know, and he's in hot water all the time, you know. And I'm sure we could talk a lot about that later on, but it's bullshit to see the type of things that are being hitting our people left and right. You have the neighborhood changing, you have your kids suffering in school now because perhaps he doesn't make the same cut as everybody else because there's new people coming in. You have your bodega of the corner or your corner store is no longer a corner store, it's a Starbucks now. You don't know how to order a fucking drink from Starbucks. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just putting myself in their shoes. Now they're saying, hey, man, you owe $6,000 in taxes when last year you were probably paying $2,000, right? Which you could probably, worked a little bit of overtime to manage.
You could probably manage.
You know, it's like now you're getting hit left and right. On top of that, the city is charging all these different taxes.
Bro, they got all types of water taxes and garbage taxes now and recycle taxes. You name it.
So, of course, when somebody says, I'll give you $400,000 for your house, the first thing you're going to do is, I'm going to move to Atlanta. I'm going to move to Orlando.
It's easy. And what you're finding is families are moving back out to the suburbs, actually. Back out to a lot of families, actually, from Pilsen are moving to communities like Back of the Yards or Midway. Midway especially, which right now properties are cheaper. But as that community starts to grow, right, starts to improve, resources come in, those families that are midway now, they're like, whoa, what happened? We thought we could afford this. Now we're going to be pushed out even further. Yep. And it's almost like a reverse suburbanization process. Mm-hmm. Like families from the suburbs are moving back into the city, closer to downtown, and families in the city are forced back out to the suburbs.
Bro, but like, people might say it's a conspiracy or whatnot, but this has been in the plans.
Oh yeah.
From, you know, daily number one.
This is structured, man. This is structured. This is strategy, right? This is what powers that be, whoever they were, whoever they are, these are things that they think about, and those policies that they write and the moves that they make, that's their agenda, you know? So it's very easy to see, because think about it now. Pilsen's not the only community. You got communities like Woodlawn, who is going to be getting the Obama Library, mm-hmm. right? And people are so excited about the Obama Library, possibly the Tiger Woods golf course. Yeah. But now those families who no one ever wanted to invest in, every time people talked about Woodlawn, Englewood, communities like that, they're like, oh, no, never, right? Almost like Cabrini Green, right? But what happened to Cabrini Green, right? Now you go over there, and where there were those high-rises that no one would ever step foot in is a beautiful Target and luxury and luxury name brand stores, right? And that's what's happening in Woodlawn and in Englewood too. So it's not only Pilsen, it's so many communities in Chicago.
Yeah. And I guess the part that, because it's beautiful to see the city becoming beautiful again, quote unquote, but it's very nasty the way it happens, right? Or the way that it's, or the underlying factor of why they're making Chicago nice or beautiful. Because for so many years, and I think we started out this conversation with that, was that for a long time, these communities needed that. Yeah. You know, these communities needed new roads. These communities needed new, better garbage. And the money was there. That's the thing, is that the money is there somehow. I mean, you have people talking about like the TIF money that is never touched, but for some reason is always in the downtown area. I mean, for a business person, it makes sense. You know, they're bringing you money in. But then the people that voted you in and the people that are actually living in the communities are not reaping any benefits out of that money that was for them. So it's happening a lot. And I guess, you know, the pro of gentrification is that it starts cleaning up, it starts becoming nice, but the con always outweighs the pros of it, right? Because
to us, others would say, oh no, like you have to deal with it, and why don't you work harder? Yeah, it's part of life or whatnot.
But okay, this is another thing that I saw, and you may agree. I saw this on an article saying, okay, gentrification might be good. You know, they move in, 20 years later, the same shit's gonna happen all over again. So the people that just moved in there are getting displaced. So that development group. It's cool because they're not the one living there. They're just putting their money in there. They're making a little bit of money. Once the area becomes shitty or whatnot, or somebody else pops up, boom, let's go somewhere else. Let's sell this building or whatnot.
It's interesting to see how suddenly there is available funds to improve communities when certain populations start to come in, right? Because like you start asking yourself, where were all those nice streets and trees before, and why again couldn't you put them in before all this development? Yep. And that's the question that I always ask myself, because the truth is, it is possible.
Yeah,
there
is money
back
for
in the back in the 90s. The city could have done way more to help Pilsen out and the families and work with them, but they don't, right? And oftentimes, what you don't get is that when they do decide, okay, we're gonna start initiating change, the oppressed or those people like our community in Pilsen are never at the table, right? And the only way to fight oppression is through the oppressed. The oppressed have to lead the battle. So you have this example of right now what's going on 18th Street in Peoria, which is a huge crossroads right now, huge hot topic in Pilsen, because it's the largest vacant land available in the community, right? And there's a outside developer from New York, mm-hmm. Property Markets Group, that posted up this proposal that was like, oh, we're going to create commercial and residential and art, and it's going to be a neighborhood center. Well, first of all, we've had a neighborhood center. Yeah. That already exists. Yeah. Second, okay, how are you going to address the people? So in Pilsen, unlike the city, the rest of the city, the majority of the city, any development greater than 8 units has to allot 21% of the units to affordable housing.
And
right,
most of the city is what, 10%?
10%. Yeah. And that was an agreement done and pressured intelligently by community organizations. Mm-hmm. Right? They're called the Pilsen Land Use Committee.
Okay.
Not every organization is on it. Certain organizations are on it. But they pressured the aldermen back a couple years to put this in place in order to... Just thinking ahead, right? Strategically, like, okay, here come all the these developers. We got to have something that protects us. It's not even legislation right now. It's an agreement. It's a contractual agreement. So we have to make sure, how do we support the leaders to hold steadfast in that, so that when developers come like PMG, they better give us 21% on-site affordable housing or there's no deal. So this developer is like, okay, I'll give you 10% of here, and then I'll buy more property around the community, and I'll give you the remaining 11%, right? It's not happening. So how can we get the entire community to start uniting on this issue, to start coming together and saying, okay, we got to support this 21%, but also start thinking about how can we advance that? How can we get more? How can we put in other protections, other legislative policies in place to protect our community and preserve the identity and culture?
Interesting. Now, when it comes down to, you might may know this or not, but when it comes down to affordable housing, right? And let's say they do the 21%. How do they verify that affordable housing is going to people of the community?
Yeah, great question. So one, there's also, I just want to point out, because there's a problem in the lingo as well. Mm. Affordable housing is very much subjective at this point, right? Because affordable housing citywide is determined by HUD, and that continues to go up with property values.
Yeah.
So if someone can say, well, affordable in Pilsen right now, the average rent is going for like $1,250. Affordable in Pilsen would be $1,000, right?
Yeah.
But let's be real. Affordable is actually cheaper than that, maybe $800,
yeah,
right? So we have to start thinking about how to change that lingo and maybe change it to low-income housing, because that makes prices really actually more affordable.
Okay. So affordable housing, is that, will that be part of Section 8, or is that
no
low income will be?
Yeah, low income. Yeah. Section 8 is completely different.
Okay.
Affordable housing is just a manner of speaking of saying it's lower than the average rent, and families could afford it, quote unquote. Afford.
So
the
anyone
products.
Can apply to move in there. It's not necessarily like you have to be in a bucket, in a list, and then they take that person out, whatever.
Right. It's not necessarily you have to make lower AMI, but people put those in place, those practices in place, to make sure that families from the community that can't afford the $1,250 or the $1,500 can stay there. Because you're right. Because it's so easy for maybe a middle class Latino family that can't afford a $1,200 rent to come in and be like, well, I want the affordable ones. I want to pay cheaper.
Yeah.
Right. But let's leave those available to families that are struggling and need that that low rent price to be able to live in the community.
And that's the interesting part, because I remember the same thing is happening around this area. I live in the Belmont Cragen neighborhood, and they just opened up. So the old Marshall Fields warehouse that's on Pulaski and DeBercy was abandoned for a very long time, and then they eventually sold it, and now there's development happening there. Might be that same. I don't think it's a New York-based company. I think it's a Chicago one, but the same thing happened. You know, they were like, they didn't want to give any affordable housing. They didn't want to do any of that. And eventually, I know that there was a lot of criticism between, hey, how do we know that they're giving that to people in the community as opposed to this list of people that perhaps are coming from the suburbs back to the city
because
they can afford it.
Right.
So I guess that's one of those things that, if it was me, I understand that. I want to make sure that somebody from my community that needs it is going to get it, as opposed to someone else. But it's crazy the way that they manipulate it in such a way where it's like, okay, I'll just buy some shitty housing over here then and then put that as affordable.
Yeah, man. And let's also remember that policies and legislations aren't perfect.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example. We have the 21% available, so it is a protection in Pilsen. However, properties, we're still losing, mm-hmm. right? I'll give you a perfect example. Recently, we lost Casaslan. Yeah. Casaslan was the heart of Pilsen for a very long time.
Okay,
it was Google before Google was ever invented, mm-hmm. right? If you had any question. You had and you wanted any kind of answer, you went to Casaslan and there was someone there or something there for you, right? Like when my brother joined a gang, like I mentioned earlier, and my pops wanted to figure out how he can help him, he went to Casaslan and received like resources and people that were able to talk to my brother and talk to the gang and help my dad figure out how to navigate that and how to get my brother out.
Wow.
Right? So you talk about a community organization, a community center. Right, this center that PMG wants to build, that was Casaslan. Casaslan was that for a lot of people, right? They used to even have pottery in the basement. That when I was a shorty, like you went and that was the first time I got to press the pedal and do some pottery classes in there. I mean, that was our place. That was our safe, our stomping grounds. We lost that.
So it got sold.
So what happened was through mismanagement. The property was lost to auction to a bank, to the bank. The bank had a closed sort of auction, sold it once, got sold again. Essentially, it was a steal every single time.
Yeah.
The last selling price was something around $700,000, right? Why is that a steal? Because now the developer is going to flip it and now he has like 5 to 8 condos that he's building, and again, because he's under that threshold, he doesn't necessarily have to set aside 21% for affordable housing, right? So each condo, each luxury condo, he's gonna sell easy at starting prices of $300,000 to $500,000, right? So do the math yourself, right? You say seven. Let's say he has 7 condos in there going at 500. That's 3.5 million, right? And he bought it for 700. He just quintupled his money, right? And who's gonna buy a condo for $500,000? It's not me.
Not one of
it's
us.
Not my tia. You know, like whose tia is that?
Yeah.
So those are the losses that we're still facing, and that's why I say like legislation and policies are not perfect. So it takes a movement at that level, but also a grassroots organizing people movement because. Yeah. We got to move our people also to be able to help them move their money and their wealth more to start putting in their own personal protections, right? So maybe have a rainy day fund. How can we help them start building their credit, right? Because at the end of the day, we want them to build their wealth because that's your own personal protection against displacement and being kicked out and priced out.
And I think always the – we're getting closer to the hour here, so I kind of want us to start honing in on one of the main issues that I noticed, too, is that within the community, it's always very hard to organize within the community because a lot of people are working, right? So a lot of these meetings happen 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't nobody going to go to these meetings if you're working a 9 to 5. Not even a 9 to 5. A lot of these guys are working 6 in the morning all the way to 8 o'clock at night or even later. They get home, they're worried about their kid, they have to help their kid with their homework. How do you get to those people? How do you get the message across so that you tell them, hey, dude, I know you're worried about everything else, but if you don't worry about this, you're going to have a lot more worries.
Yeah, what I'm finding is you meet them where they're at. You know, you're right. A lot of families do work a 9 to 5 or even after or multiple jobs.
Yeah.
And a lot of times what happens is with these, say, for instance, these financial literacy workshops is they're asking, what you're asking families to do is to come to a location, coming to you to receive the resources, right? But we got to twist that entire conversation around, because it's not about coming to us. We got to come to you. Yep. Does that mean we go to your front door? Does that mean I come at 8:30 at night, right, when you just get there, yep, and share a meal with you, or bring pan dulce and talk to you about all these resources? Because something that I love about our culture is that we talk. Yeah. We talk to each other, yeah, right? So how can we start changing our conversations so that I only have to talk to the tia, and the tia could talk to the rest of the family, you know? Because those conversations, those shifts of narratives are going to help our families start moving their mind shifts and be like, oh, well, I can save. I can build my credit, mm-hmm, despite that I'm undocumented. I can start moving my money and making some more investing here and there, right? Exactly. And those things become real, not just, oh, those are what white people do. Or exactly, if I have more... whenever I have more money, I can do it.
Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head, because we talk a lot about that, where there's always a lot of community efforts going on, but it's always like, come here, come here, come right there. And it becomes very intimidating for someone who perhaps doesn't know the lingo of finance, right? And
right,
they're saying, come to a bank and talk. No, hell no.
I ain't going to a bank.
No, they're going to steal my money.
Exactly.
You know? So I like the fact that what you mentioned, you know, a lot of going to the actual person, talking to them. And before we finish the interview here, can you tell me why, you know, if you could sum it up into like a quick sentence, why do you do what you do? Because it is a very thankless job.
Yeah, that's a great question, man. And I ask myself every single day. But at the end of the day, it's because I truly love people.
Yeah.
And I that's why I started teaching, right? I mean, when I went to a school, a prestigious school in the East Coast, and I didn't go to law school or medical school, like, I had to come back to the people. Because I truly believe that it takes reinvestment in our people and love for our people to help them get ahead, right? This is in whatever way they want to. Not whatever way I want to, but whatever way they want to. And I think that's why I do it. Like,
awesome.
Plain and simple. I love people.
I'm loving it, man.
That's it.
But we've had some great conversations today. If anybody wants to find out more, or perhaps they want to reach out to you, where should they go?
Yeah, man. So I am the housing organizer for the Resurrection Project. You can reach me at my email, hdominguez, DOMINGUEZ, @resurrectionproject.org. Or you can give me a call. My phone number is 312-292-0931. So both of those ways. And I'll come to you. I'll help you with whatever you need. So.
Awesome, man. I really appreciate you coming by.
Yo, thank you.
Getting the word out. I know that it's been a topic that a lot of people have contacted us about. They've just been saying, hey, you know, we've been talking a lot about Humboldt Park and the Puerto Rican community. Let's talk a little bit more about what's happening in the Mexican community. So, mi gente, you'll see a lot more of these discussions happening lately. We're in the works right now of doing some type of video interviews as well,
yeah,
in the Pilsen community. So I'll be reaching out to you about that. Once again, thank you so much for coming by,
bro. I just want to shout you out because these are the businesses and entrepreneurships and opportunities that we need to support, right? La Verdad, this podcast needs to be heard throughout the nation. You need to share this with your families. You need to share this with your cousins, with your primos, and your friends, because these real people that they bring on this show, these are the people that are making ground level change.
Exactly.
Right. And also shout out to my moms, shout out my dad, shout out my family, my brothers, shout out my girl. So much love to you.
Definitely,
bro.
Definitely, man. Mi gente, you heard it here. Please share, please like, and just put it all over the place. Peace and God bless.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.